The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Beautiful Monday afternoon here at Edstone. It could be any time of the day for some of our listeners, though. Early in the morning in Edmond, Oklahoma, where their Philadelphia youth camp is ongoing. I guess they're right about at the midway point of the camp experience, and we're just about to begin ours tomorrow evening. The students had an orientation this morning to get ready for tomorrow's camp, and aside from not having much rain in recent weeks, and the grass being just a little bit brown here at Edstone, it really has been beautiful in so many ways. The weather is looking to be somewhere in the low 80s, so I'm sure the young people who will be arriving today and tomorrow will really enjoy all the activities that we have planned for them. Well, on today's program, we're going to follow up with a Bible study that I think will fit in nicely with what we discussed on Friday about making that ruthless break from screen addiction. We talked about some good leisure time activities on Friday's program. And today we'll continue with ruling your own spirit well, really having the self-discipline and the motivation and the desire to set your life and your daily activities on a proper course. So I think if you happen to hear Friday's broadcast, you'll find that this study, I think, ties in well with that one. Well, some really good news to report to you on the Greenville public appearance campaign. My father's PAC appearance last night in Greenville, South Carolina. Andrew Locher informs me that 70% of the tickets requested were actually used, and that's up from, I think, the typical percentage is about 45%. So a really, really strong turnout yesterday or last night in Greenville. There were 320 people who attended, and it was about a 50-50 split between those who attend Philadelphia Church of God services regularly and those who don't. So about half and half, half were members, half were not. 37 people signed up for the follow-up Bible studies. Andrew Locher says that the ticket request for tonight, the second night of the pack, I think it was about half of what they had for the first day. But as he also mentioned, in Toronto, the last pack that my father conducted, I think we saw something like, double the number of people who signed up for the follow-up Bible study. So there probably won't be as many there tonight, but hopefully we'll have even more sign on for the follow-up Bible study. So some very, very exciting news. 37 already signing up for the follow-up study. Well, over the weekend, the FBI released 412 pages of documents related to the surveillance of Carter Page, including the FISA court application. Carter Page, remember, he worked for the Trump presidential campaign in 2016, and these pages released by the FBI, 412 of them, they're heavily redacted, but the information that is there, that is readable, it pretty much confirms that the FBI relied upon the infamous Steele dossier to convince the court to grant the wiretap.
I think the one takeaway that Trump supporters will not like is the degree to which the Steele dossier was relied on very heavily to secure this FISA warrant against a U.S. citizen and a Trump associate.
A U.S. citizen, an associate of Donald Trump's, and that's pretty much all that they had to go on, this dossier. They went to the FISA court and said, look, we're basing this on a credible source that we have. So because we have a credible source who put together this report, then the report itself must be credible. And the thing is, even in saying that the source was credible, he wasn't even a credible source. Leave aside the dossier for a moment. unverified gossip, whatever it was that James Comey called it. Even he admitted in testimony that these allegations were not verified. And they were all put together by Christopher Steele, who hated Donald Trump, who confessed that he was doing everything that he could to try to bring down the Trump campaign. He was a Democrat operative. He was employed by the Democrats, the DNC. And then he lied to the FBI, and the FBI later fired him right after they applied for the first warrant. So the dossier, I mean, the content of that, it speaks for itself. But then you look at Steele and all these FBI documents. Here's an example. This is from page 16 of the document that the documents that the FBI released over the weekend. It says, notwithstanding source one's reason for conducting the research into candidate one's ties to Russia, that of course would be Trump, President Trump, or then candidate Trump. Based on Source One's previous reporting history with the FBI, whereby Source One provided reliable information to the FBI believes Source One's reporting herein to be credible. Well, we've used him before, and we believe him. That's what the FBI said to these FISA courts. We've used Christopher Steele. This is right before they fired him. Because they couldn't trust him. He was taking all the contents of the dossier to the media. And so the FBI, after saying, don't do that, they said, well, we've got to let you go. And yet right within the application, they say, hey, this is reliable information, Judge. We believe his reporting is credible. He's had previous reporting history with the FBI. Can you believe this? Andrew McCarthy, he was on Fox News yesterday, and he was explaining what this would be like doing using another scenario. This is clip three.
Let's say it's a drug case, and I want a warrant because I think they're selling or they're making heroin packages in a house, right? So I bring my agent to the judge, and I say, we need a search warrant. And the judge says, fine, what's your probable cause? And I say, Judge, I have this great agent here. Every year he wins Agent of the Year. He is like the best agent. He's got the most awards. The judge will look at me and say, but what's the probable cause?
Right. In a lawful society, the judge would look at him and say, where's the evidence that this is going on? And then the agents or the FBI, let's put it back into that scenario, would say, well, we don't have really evidence, but look at this agent. I mean, he's top notch. And he wasn't even top-notch in the case of Steele. I mean, if this is what the FBI can do, and a FISA court judge, we should add, if this is what they can do to spy on and to harass a presidential campaign and eventually the president of the United States, if they can do all of this just based upon slanderous gossip, Russian propaganda of all things, you want to talk about Russian collusion with politicians. It would be with the DNC. It would be with the Hillary Clinton campaign. But if the FBI can spy on the president of the United States, or at least his campaign, I mean, what can it do to you and me? This is what my father keeps saying. McCarthy went on to say this. In his interview on Fox, this is clip one.
I'm really embarrassed because I told people for months that this could never, ever happen. What I told people was that you're not even going to hear about the dossier when we finally learn what's in the FISA warrants, that what the FBI will do is what the FBI always does, which is they'll take 7 or 8 facts that are important, they'll scrub them so that the FBI can verify and corroborate them, and those will be put into the affidavit, and that'll be the only thing you hear about. When you read this thing, it's astonishing.
It's astonishing. He's embarrassed because he felt like, you remember Strzok talking about all the layers so confidently, there's nothing bad that could come from our department. There's too many layers below us and above us. We all look out for each other. Well, in another sense, McCarthy, he comes from the other side of the political spectrum and said, with FBI agents and the DOJ and then the judges, I mean, at these FISA courts, surely this couldn't happen in the United States of America. And he had been saying it for months, McCarthy, but now he's embarrassed because it did happen. It is happening. It continues. It's continuing to this day. Now a year and a half into Donald Trump's presidency. And he's tweeting out a firestorm this morning and yesterday. And you can see why. And I know the major media, they'll just yawn at this. Oh, well, we heard a little bit about that back in February. And that's all by design. Drip, drip, drip. The FBI, why didn't the FBI turn over these documents months ago? And then finally they turn over the documents, heavily redacted, of course. But even with what's there, you see what it was that they relied upon. When going to a judge and saying, we need to spy on a member of the Trump campaign. Why? Well, because of Christopher Steele. He's a good agent. He's won awards. He's one of the best. He's worked with us before. And the judge of all things, says, all right, yep, let's go for it. One last clip here from Andy McCarthy, clip two.
I must say, I mean, this is so bad that they ought to be looking at the judges who signed off on this stuff, not just the people who gave it.
That's right. That's right. You want to talk about the deep state? You want to talk about corruption at the highest levels? It's not just Comey and McCabe and Strzok and the ones at the top of the FBI. You're talking about a judge in cahoots with this kind of corruption. And if you remember, even Peter Strzok in some of his infamous tweets, or not tweets, his text messages to his lover, he made comments even about the judges. Oh, I know him. I know him. I need to get together with him. That sort of thing. I mean, how much confidence do you have in the American judicial system now? When this kind of thing is being revealed? Byron York had a piece at the Washington Examiner saying that, you know, pretty much what we saw over the weekend, it confirms what Nunes had in his memo back in February. The memo was accurate. You remember the Nunes memo? He was attacked relentlessly for wanting to release it to the American public. The Democrats said, no, you cannot release this memo, and had to go all the way to the White House. And the president had to finally sign off on it after a delay, another delay. And then finally it's made known to the public after staunch Democrat resistance. And even the media, they won't admit it, but they didn't want it to see the light of day either, the memo, because it has the truth. Well, finally the memo's out there, February 2nd. And then what happens? All of the people that hate Donald Trump, they come out and say, oh, that's Devin Nunes. He's a partisan. He's a liar. There's no truth to that memo. The dossier may have factored into it just minimally, but we have all kinds of evidence of collusion. There's all kinds of evidence. Well, look at what Nunes had in his memo. This is from February 2nd. He said this, the dossier compiled by Christopher Steele on behalf of the Democrat National Committee and the Hillary Clinton campaign formed an essential part of the Carter Page FISA application. Steele was a longtime FBI source who was paid over $160,000 by the DNC and Clinton campaign via the law firm Perkins Coie and research firm Fusion GPS to obtain derogatory information on Donald Trump's ties to Russia. And as Byron York brings out this weekend, this is all accurate. What Nunes put in the memo is accurate. They relied upon the Steele dossier, first and foremost, almost exclusively. And then you remember all the other things that the memo brought out, that they didn't reveal this to the judge. They said, hey, we've got a great agent. He's given us good information. You've got to give us this warrant. And the judge said, okay, take it. The judge didn't even ask, well, where did this agent come from? And who funded his research? Who funded his report? None of that. None of that was in the application. None of these agents at the FBI or the DOJ said that, hey, we better inform you, judge, that the Democratic National Committee funded this. He was paid $160,000. He really does not. He does not want Donald Trump to become president. It was all accurate. Byron York says when the Nunes memo was released, there was controversy over its assertion that the dossier formed an essential part of the Page FISA application. But Senate Judiciary Committee staff who reviewed the FISA application separately from the House concluded that the dossier allegations made up the bulk of the application. You remember Andy McCabe, caught in one moment of truth-telling, said that without the dossier, there would have been no application. We wouldn't have had a leg to stand on. It says, even a Washington Post article Sunday purporting to debunk the Nunes memo in light of the FISA application conceded that the dossier played a prominent role in the FISA application. Even the Washington Post, in an article it put out to try to debunk the Nunes memo in light of these latest documents, and that's the way that it goes. You can't get to the truth. You can't really get to the bottom of it. You try to suppress it if you're the radical left. You try to keep the memo from seeing the light of day. And then if it does see the light of day, you say, oh, those are lies. They're just a bunch of lies. And then it dies down after a while. And then finally, the FBI turns over the documents. And then people come forward and say, see, it proves that Nunes was lying. It proves he was lying. And that's the way it was with the IG report as well. 500 and some odd pages, 412 pages over the weekend. And people from both sides saying that it confirms what they've said all along. Who's right? Well, Byron York says the bottom line is that whatever the criticism it has received, the Nunes memo was almost entirely accurate. Go and read it again. I did this morning. It's just 4 pages. It's amazing how clearly it's spelled out from that House Intel Committee. And congratulations to Devin Nunes for courageously speaking the truth. They all hate him in the media. They all hate him at the DNC. But the bottom line is that what he produced in February, as Byron York says, it's accurate. And so no wonder President Trump, he's tweeting out this morning that this is, well, I guess it was yesterday, where he said he was being illegally spied upon. And it's not about Carter Page, as he tweeted again this morning. I mean, this was all about getting Donald Trump. It was all about getting Donald Trump. And as the president said, the Republicans need to get tough. But that's been a difficult thing for them to do. Look at what they did last week. They were so quick to just hop right on board with all of the president's critics. We've frequently referred to this article in the May issue of The Trumpet, Saving America from the Radical Left. You should go back, though, a month before that and look at another one at thetrumpet.com or in The Trumpet magazine from April 2018. The Nunes memo exposes unseen threat to America. That's from my father. And in this piece, he shows how that this was Russian propaganda, this dossier, and how that dossier was how the FBI obtained a warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. He points out how James Comey himself said the document was salacious and unverified. It said that the president Of course, at the time, he wasn't running for president. I think it was back in 2012 or something when he visited Moscow. All of these revolting acts with prostitutes in Moscow and how that Vladimir Putin had some dirt on President Trump he was using to blackmail him. I mean, all these themes, they're continuing to this day. I heard some reports from the radical left just yesterday. Oh, he's an agent. He's an agent. Oh, Vladimir Putin must surely have something on him. They're still using the content of the dossier, the salacious, unverified content of the dossier. It's embedded into their thinking. Well, it was put together, as my father explains, by Christopher Steele. He hated the Trump campaign. It was opposition research and so on and so forth. Desperate he was. He was desperate to prevent Donald Trump from being elected. And this was the one that the Democrats hired. Hey, he sounds like a great great source that can get us some dirt. And he gets the dirt, and the FBI uses it, and a judge signs off on it. In that article, my father says, so this memo exposes a conspiracy within these government agencies to undermine candidate Donald Trump's presidential campaign. Now he's president of the United States and is still a suspect in a criminal investigation without any evidence to justify. There's no evidence. If there was any, as Trey Gowdy said over the weekend, well, Adam Schiff would have leaked it by now. Somebody would have leaked it. They've been leaking and leaking and leaking. And yet somehow there's no evidence of collusion that's ever been leaked. And that's because there's no evidence, period. He says a little further on, well, first he talks about the dossier again, how the FBI relied upon that to get the FISA warrant. And then my father says this, think about this. A law enforcement source fed information to the media, and then the law enforcement agencies used the media's stories as proof of its claims. I kind of skipped over a little bit there, but this was Steele. You remember Steele was getting anxious, and he couldn't understand why the FBI wasn't running with this content faster than he thought they should be going faster with it. So he's leaking it to the media as well. And then, as it turns out, the FBI, after a Yahoo News story appears in September of 2016, relying on Carter Page's information, the unverified gossip, and then the FBI uses that Yahoo News story, or Yahoo, and says that, hey, it's in the news as well, and we've got more sources. It's not just the Steele dossier, and in fact, all it was this circular reasoning, as has been said, or the echo chamber. My father addresses that in the article. The media wrote stories about these claims in the dossier, which law enforcement agencies used as even more proof to renew the warrant. Law enforcement and media formed an echo chamber. They were all working in cahoots. And you'll remember the Obama people were really good at setting up or creating the echo chamber. Ben Rhodes bragged about it with respect to the JCPOA. Yeah, we'd get the experts, quote unquote, and then we'd send them out equipped with our talking points. And then the experts would get interviewed by the media. And he said it was so easy to create this echo chamber. And that's what they did with the dossier. You had the Mother Jones piece, you had the Yahoo News piece, and they were all relying on information or content from the dossier. And then if you take it further, remember there was the setup in early January 2017, where they had to get Donald Trump in a meeting with Comey, where Comey had to tell him about the contents of the dossier so that Mr. Trump was aware of it, because remember, CNN and BuzzFeed, they were waiting, and they needed a hook to be able to report it. But now that it had been discussed with the President of the United States, well, that gave it the feel of, well, this is authentic. If the President has been briefed on it, then this must be real. An echo chamber. Look at 2 Timothy 3, just to conclude this segment. I went through a few of these verses on Friday's program, the one about screen addiction. just to give you one last quote here from my father's piece. This is from April 2018. It says, so the mainstream media has been complicit in this lawless plot. They continually give credibility to this nonsense. Lawless, constitution-hating people now lead our federal law enforcement agencies. That's the truth. And the media keeps giving them cover. I saw Carter Page interviewed over the weekend on Jake Tapper's show, and there's Tapper saying, oh, well, are you a Russian agent? Is Donald Trump a Russian agent? Well, what about what you did here at this conference? As if anyone that goes to a conference now who happens to see or talk with a Russian is a spy. They won't let it go. They want to give credibility to this nonsense because they're lawless, constitution-hating people. That's the truth. They act as if they're superior to Congress, but Congress provides oversight to hold them accountable to the American people. The Nunes memo does just that. That's right. That's his job. That's all of Congress's job. And that's why the FBI, an extension of the White House, should have turned over those documents from the beginning. I mean, if they want to get to the bottom of this, if they want the truth to prevail. But they don't. That's the point. They don't. They want to cover it up. They want to give credibility to this slanderous gossip, to all of this nonsense. They want to keep it. They want to keep it going. Because the president of the United States, don't you know, he's a Russian agent. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 4 is about being lovers of pleasures more than lovers of God. I talked about this on Friday's program. It all has a form of godliness. But denying the power thereof, from such, Paul says, turn away. And then it was my wife, after hearing that show, who said, yeah, if you look at the next several verses, in light of all that we've been discussing with respect to the deep state, It's interesting. Verse 7 says, ever learning and never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. See, this verse, ever learning, but not able to come to the knowledge of the truth. I mean, this shows that it's possible to learn something, even to learn something new, but without actually acquiring the truth. Now, you think of that verse in relation to Revelation 12:9, where it says Satan has deceived the whole world. Or 2 Corinthians 4:4, where it says the god of this world, that would be the devil, he has blinded the minds of men. They're blind to the truth. You know that Satan is behind this. You know he's behind the drip, 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 to the point where, oh, the documents are dumped on a Saturday afternoon. And all the media, I mean, they've heard the Nunes memo before. They see the Nunes memo as unverified, salacious gossip. And the unverified, salacious gossip they see as the absolute truth. Putin has something on Mr. Trump. Donald Trump is a Russian agent. See, they've got it exactly backwards. And here they're giving credibility to this nonsense, as my father said. Well, it's not like this has never happened. Paul says that here in this passage, but it's especially bad now because, as my father covers in the same article, the April 2018 magazine, the demons are confined to this earth. They are swarming. They know their time is about up. They are attacking U.S. institutions from the top down. And really, as my father says, we all have a part in it. It's our sins, the sins of our people. That's how we've become so lawless as a nation. Verse 8 says, Now as Jannes and Jambres withstood Moses, so do these also resist the truth. Men of corrupt minds, reprobate concerning the faith. Just like in the days of Moses, when Jannes and Jambres withstood Moses and resisted the truth. The Apostle Paul and Timothy, they were confronting the same kind of lawlessness, this same lying spirit. Verse 9, he says here, this is 2 Timothy 3, but they shall proceed no further, for their folly shall be manifest unto all men, as theirs also was. See, God will make it known, their folly. He'll expose the lies. just like he's doing now in this temporary resurgence. My father said in that April piece, where would America be right now if the radical left had won the last election? Hillary Clinton's stated goal was to continue the legacy of Barack Obama. And if she had become president, none of this corruption would have come to light. He says Watergate is trivial compared to the lawlessness of today's radical left. See, God's shining the light of truth upon all of this, out of his love and mercy, to give us one last opportunity to see that we're under attack, to see that our sins are bringing us down, to turn to God in repentance and faith. He says, finally, this is from April 2018, the radical left has attempted to use the Russian investigation to cripple the Trump presidency. They don't just want to wrest control from Mr. Trump. They're trying to take control of the government forever. They're working hard to smash the last remaining obstacles preventing them from accumulating so much power over the country that no one can do a thing about it. I mean, you look at what they have already. Look at what continues to happen. And this is under an administration that is the target of the attack, the president of the United States. And even he's having to fight for his political survival because of these evil demonic forces. Well, God's truth will prevail. And it's as sobering as some of those quotes are from April 2018, it's also very, very encouraging to know the truth of the Bible, to know that prophecy is not just for any private interpretation. The Bible interprets it itself. God tells us. He tells us what's ahead. He tells us where this is leading. There is no political party, not one side or the other, that's going to save America in the permanent sense. No one except Jesus Christ can do that. No one except God the Father can do that. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Fleury's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Fleury.
I believe this is our fourth summer broadcasting here in the bunker, broadcasting down here in the cellar, and this is certainly the hottest summer that we've had, and it does heat up in here pretty good. Sam was trying to cool it off during the break there with a really loud fan that we can't run during the broadcast. But it just made me think that I'm heading back to the States in the early part of August. And if all goes well, I think we'll be moving to the top of Edstone, the top of the house, all the way up into the attic, from the cellar to the attic. That would be up what? Let's see, 1, 2, 3. I think 3 flights or 3 stories. So we'll have to see how much cooler it'll be up there, because I don't think we'll be able to open the windows during the broadcast because of all the mowers and everything else that goes on around Edstone every day. In any event, it's going to be a nice new studio. Sam's going to have a nice little booth that he can get comfy in and see me through the window like he does now, although right now it's a really cramped space. So we're going to combine it, actually, the radio studio with some TV filming. I'm not sure if we'll do the full-length program from the new set upstairs, but we'll certainly set it up to where we can do some shorter videos on the fly and put those up on the website from time to time as well. So we're excited about that, and we'll tell you about the progress probably when I get back from the trip to the United States. Just one email that I thought would lead into our study here. This comes from one of our listeners in Oklahoma who listened to the program on Friday about making a ruthless break from screen addiction. She says just how much she loved the show. She said, I think that for stay-at-home moms, screen addiction can be quite challenging. You start with a newborn baby who you are feeding for many hours a day and night. Or maybe you're stuck holding them while they sleep, because the second you put them down, they wake up. Naturally, you turn to your phone during those long hours. After all, you can't really do much else when you only have one hand available and you're trying to stay motionless. I actually have found myself wondering what mothers did for thousands of years before we had phones. Once your baby becomes a toddler and you have a little more freedom, it's a long, hard road to break that screen addiction that developed when they were young. She says, I love the section of the show where you talked about developing productive leisure activities. So many people wear their busyness like a badge of honor, as if downtime is a bad thing. I spent my whole childhood learning and being challenged, horseback riding lessons, chess club, swim team, Girl Scouts, AP classes, summer camp, soccer, etc. And then when I graduated college, all extracurricular self-betterment activities came to a screeching halt. Only recently did I decide to do something about my staggering, or rather stagnating, mind and body. I recently started attending adult group tennis lessons and taking lessons for an instrument I've always wanted to play. And I feel rejuvenated, stimulated. I feel like a kid again. I can't believe the difference it makes in all aspects of my life. As an adult, it's a sacrifice to get back into these activities, but it's well worth it. Thank you for encouraging us to challenge ourselves in the pursuit of productive leisure time and to break the screen addiction. Well, it is a challenge to live that very balanced and yet full life. Not unlike Winston Churchill, as I said on Friday's program. I mean, he was a diligent worker for the 9 hours or so that he put in writing and researching. But then the other things that he squeezed into the daily routine. It's pretty amazing. If you look at I've been reading through the New Throne of David book, and I'll just refer you to page 36. If you have that book, you should go look at that page. It's quite a jolt, all of the content on that page. And I think it's headed up with the subhead, God expects more of you. He expects more. I've got just an excerpt from that page. It says here, the throne of David is all about saving all of humanity. We have to keep this great hope in our minds. This is what we're here to do. And then my father says this, do we realize who we are? Do we realize what God is using us to do? We have a wonderful message of hope, and God has now put the throne right in our midst. This is phenomenal and mind-staggering. He says God has upped the ante considerably. He expects more of us. He believes we can do more. He believes with everybody pitching in, we're going to excel in every way, but we're going to do it on our knees, as Mr. Armstrong did before the prayer rock. That is the only way. And he says later on, we need to be thanking God and asking him to help us rise to the level he wants to publicize this message and usher in the throne of God to this world. Yes, indeed, we need to be praying for God to help us rise to the level that he is establishing, to the standard that he has set. We've got to realize who we are. Revelation 1, Revelation 5, we're kings and priests. We're to behave like royalty. Because very soon we're going to introduce Jesus Christ, the King of Kings, to the whole world. And if we're going to be able to rule with Jesus Christ, we've got to start now by ruling our own spirit and ruling it well, as the proverb says. If we don't have any rule over our own spirit, we're like a city without walls. We're defenseless. A man with no control over himself is like a town with broken walls. That's the way it is for a true Christian. If we don't rule well that spirit, if we don't have the self-discipline needed to do more, as my father said in that quote, page 36 of the New Throne of David book, look at it sometime. It'll give you quite a jolt if your attitude's right. I've been referring to the example of Churchill repeatedly over the last few weeks and at the Art of Manliness website. There's a section there that just kind of summarizes the content of William Manchester's trilogy, his books on Churchill. And I've talked a little bit about his education before, but as this website brings out, I mean, he after he finished his work at Sandhurst and then was on assignment off in India, Churchill wrote that the world opened like Aladdin's cave. The Art of Manliness says his life was still subject to the routines and rituals of military discipline, but the possibilities for adventures of his own choosing increased manyfold, as did his time for studying whatever he pleased. Though his formal schooling had ended, Churchill began an autodidact phase that would last until his death. It says, as his 23rd birthday approached, the desire for learning came upon him, and he began to feel that he was wanting in even the vaguest knowledge about many large spheres of thought. Thus, while stationed at his first post in India, Winston read books on philosophy, politics, economics, and sociology for 4 to 5 hours a day. He fell in love with the English language and its power and possibilities. Finally, it says, Winston was utilizing his mind's great potential to its full extent. Now, you talk about a balanced and full life, as I said on Friday. That is Winston Churchill. That is also Herbert Armstrong. You think about what Herbert Armstrong taught us and taught our children. We've got these youth camps going on. I mentioned Friday about just the program of PYC and how that schedule, that routine at camp, that in itself gives us quite a lesson when you think about building godly character. Mr. Armstrong defined it as coming to the knowledge of what's true and right, as opposed to the false values. And then making of one's own free will and volition the choice to do the right instead of the wrong. And then, as he said, he explained this in quite a few of his publications and books. And then, as he said, the exercise of the will in actually doing the right instead of the wrong. And this is what he wrote to the young people. This was in a youth magazine, 1984. Character, then, once the true knowledge is acquired and the right decision made, involves self-discipline. The truly educated person is a self-disciplined person. See, the truly educated individual rules his own spirit. He has control over himself. And, of course, this works in two directions. Self-restraint and self-propulsion. That's why we need to know the truth. That's why we need to understand true values, because we need to know what to go after with zeal and ambition. And we also need to know what we should resist against and avoid. We are God's royal family. That is brought out as clear as ever in the New Throne of David book. God's royal family, rulers of tomorrow. But how are we going to rule in the wonderful world of tomorrow if we can't rule ourselves today? Mr. Armstrong had another article back in 1983. I think this was also in the Youth magazine, where he talked about the problem with the younger generation and how that young people today, they're not taught self-discipline. They're not trained in self-control. So they just kind of follow along, giving in to every impulse or inclination they have. And they don't use judgment, certainly not. And so they get into these bad habits. And they don't consider, you know, well, should I do something? It's all just whether or not I want to do it. It doesn't matter if I should do it. You see, Winston Churchill was from an era when it was much more common to say, well, we should do this for the good of the country, for the good of the nation, in service to our God. Today, it's just all about doing what you want to do. Radical individualism. He said to the youth, there is no control of self. When power is uncontrolled, then the greater the power, the greater the potential danger. If this younger generation is imbued with an excess of pep, energy, and power, the greater is the danger, unless that power is controlled, held in check by the force of self-discipline. See, in that same passage, 2 Timothy 3, I didn't read verse 3, but Paul says there about the last days in these last days we'd be without self-control or powerless. Incontinent is the word that it uses. Look at this world and the ways of this world and all of the things that weaken willpower and self-discipline. The worldliness, the riotous living, the spirit of laziness, do as little as possible and get as much as you can for it in return. This idea that, well, to be happy, you need to be lazy. You need to sit around and do nothing. You're happiest when you're the most bored. Again, we discussed some of that on Friday. But those ways of this world, they've rubbed off on us. They've rubbed off on our children. And we really have to do our part to build character. We have to have the self-discipline to avoid every impulse or inclination, but to also propel ourselves, like Winston Churchill did, in the direction of his books, in the direction of polo or fencing, in the direction of more active leisure time activities, feeding the fish, playing cards with the children, chasing them around the house, or maybe outside it would be better, but just things that are not so much sedentary. That are certainly not just sitting in front of a screen for hours and hours on end. It's just like Mr. Armstrong said. I played that clip for you on Friday. I mean, we've only got the one life. We can't just waste it away. Here again is what he said in one of his old messages. This is clip 5.
Well, you sit 5.5 hours in front of television just watching these shows, many of which just carry you off into a sort of a dreamy dreamland of some kind, and let your mind just wander wherever it takes it. How alert are you when it's over? Do you feel like going and studying your Bible? Are you in the mood of prayer? Do you feel like going into a private room and having a real heart-rending prayer with God? Do you feel like getting in touch with God and kind of the very joy and the great, well, really joy and the happiness that comes with a real contact with God? Are you in the mood for that? When you spend about 5.5 hours in front of a television set looking at these shows, looking at all the murders and all of the things that you see, you know that you're not. Then what is that doing to your life? Listen, my friend, that's your life, and you've just got the one. And you just have this one life to live. What are you doing with it? Are you whiling it away and wasting it?
That's Herbert Armstrong from one of his old radio programs. There's a There's a verse in Hebrews 5 that says that we need to exercise the senses. And here, God has given us all of these senses, the five senses. Missing dimension in sex brings this out. The sense of hearing and sight and taste and so on. And God gave us this because he wants us to enjoy life. But not fast food. To just take the example of taste. Not the things that seem like they're the tastiest. But the ones that actually build health. And of course, God's law reveals. He reveals the way to what's right. And he reveals what's wrong. He reveals what's not right. All scripture, Paul said, is inspired by God. And it's profitable for teaching, for reproof, for amendment, and for moral discipline. It's profitable for moral discipline. Paul said in that same book that God's given us the spirit of power and of love and of a sound mind. Or a disciplined mind. That's really the meaning there. And so we've got to set our minds on the things of God, and we've got to go in the direction of God. We've got to propel ourselves in that direction. But the beauty of it is that God then empowers us with the strength and the discipline and the temperance we need to really serve him. But what are we showing God? Are we fighting? Are we fighting for his truth? That was there in the New Throne of David booklet this morning when I was reading it. How that so many have just turned away from the truth of God. They didn't love it. God tested us. This is brought out in Malachi's message too. And so many of God's people, an overwhelming majority of God's people, they didn't love the truth enough to hold on to it. It's going to take a disciplined mindset to really go after God, or really to just go after any of these things we're talking about, to go after the right kind of leisure time activities, to go after God in our prayer and our Bible study. I'm going to talk later about just having a sharper focus. I mean, think about how much concentration and focus factors into everything that we do, whether it's work or play or prayer, Bible study. I mean, if we don't have the right focus, or if we don't have a sustained focus, there's not going to be much to it. There's not going to be any depth to it. I won't take the time to go over to Isaiah 55. I think I touched on a few verses there just last week. But let's conclude in 2 Corinthians 10. These are familiar verses. Remember page 36 of the New Throne of David booklet. God expects more. He expects more of us. I mean, he's upped the ante considerably. And so we've got to rise to that level. And of course, we do that by dropping down to our knees and crying out to God for help and power. He is looking to take this to another level, to publicize this message to the largest audience possible and to usher in then that throne of God to the whole world. Here in 2 Corinthians 10, verse 3, it says, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh." I mean, we live in the Spirit. We walk in the Spirit. And we've got to put on that spiritual armor every day, Ephesians 6, because we're engaged in warfare. We're going on the offensive. Paul says, "For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds." He says, "Casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ." See that battlefield in this spiritual war? It's right there between our ears every day. It happens. Major battles, minor skirmishes, they're ongoing. We're in the midst of a great spiritual war, and look at the casualties. Look at the many brethren that have capitulated. They've surrendered to our enemy, to the devil. to all of these demons that have infested the surface of this earth, who are confined to this earth, and who are coming after our people, coming after our nations, coming after our children. Do we recognize the enemy? Are we resisting against it? Are we vigilant? Are we watchful? Are we observant to the needs of our families, our children, our spouses, ourselves? God really and truly does expect more. He expects more of us. And as my father said on page 36, please look at it, page 36 of the New Throne of David, he not only expects more of us, he believes that we can do more. Well, it starts in our minds. It starts with directing our lives, our daily routine, what we think on, how we manage our time, what activities we engage in. And of course, even before all of that, as he said there on page 36, we've got to go to God. We've got to get on our knees and go to God, just like Mr. Armstrong did at that prayer rock back in the early 1930s. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.